The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
Oh, yeah, that's me. Welcome to a Thursday. God, it's Thursday. Oh, my goodness. The news of the week just keeps getting weirder and weirder. And we're going to cover a lot of it today, as usual. It is Thursday, so Howie Klein will be here for in the second half of the show. Always an interesting conversation with Howie. And, I need to promote what's happening here tomorrow. And, you know, maybe Howie wants to weigh in. And I'd be surprised if he didn't, because, you know, Howie Klein and I know each other from Los Angeles, from when I was doing music radio out there, and he was president of Reprise Records. And so, so Howie Klein will be with us. He'd bring artists up to the radio station all the time, and cool records, because we were the only station that would play them. So I'll be curious to get Howie's memories of that cool radio station that went off the air 25 years ago tomorrow. My, how time flies when we're not having fun. But we also weren't having fun this morning. Well, I was, because I wasn't watching the National Prayer Breakfast. Why is there still a National Prayer Breakfast? I ask this question every year. I really, really do. And in years past, I've gone to my kind of go-to guy for all things dealing with the family, and that would be Jeff Charlotte. Jeff Charlotte, of course, wrote the book, The Family, and the follow-up book, C Street. And then Netflix optioned them and made like a docu-series called The Family about it. Well, The Family is creepy, if I had to use one word to describe them. And there are the people behind this National Prayer Breakfast every year. I didn't even know it was happening today. It sort of just snuck up on us, but I guess that was by design. So, you know, I was going to call on Jeff, but he was just on the show like a week or two ago. And then I checked his Twitter feed and listened to what Jeff Charlotte wrote today. He tweeted, "I wrote two books and collaborated on a Netflix documentary on the family, but at JT Larson," that's Jonathan Larson, "is the guy on the beat now. If this group, historically the most influential Christian nationalist organization in Washington, concerns you, follow Jonathan for the most up-to-date reporting." And then I checked Jonathan's Twitter feed, and sure enough, wow, he's got the scoop. So joining us on the program is Jonathan Larson. Hey, John, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome back to the show. It's been a while.
Thanks, Nicole.
Sure. And for people who, it's like, why does that name sound familiar? Because you've been kicking around the progressive political media world for a long time. You worked with Keith Olbermann on Countdown, right? You worked, didn't you work on The Daily Show?
Very briefly.
Okay.
I don't even merit a footnote in history.
you produced Up with Chris Hayes when he was doing the weekend morning thing. You worked with Anderson. I mean, you've been kicking around. And these days,
Air America Radio.
Hello. And these, although I don't think we were there at the same time.
I was there at the very start.
And I was there at the very end. Yeah. You know, I came in, you know.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron's morning drive show.
You know, that's where I know. That was, I got to say, that was such brilliant radio. That was, It was the best. It was Mark Maron really showing his stuff. And it was before he was a star. It was before he was a household name. And he was so creative. That was the best radio show. And
we had a lot of Daily Show folks.
Yeah.
Right. In the team behind the scenes, making sure that Mark had a lot of like good things to play with, you know? So it was a terrible, wonderful time.
Terrible, wonderful time. Yeah, and I get that. And that show never should have been taken off the air. I just got to say that it was before its time. It was creative. It was cutting edge. And I don't know why. I do know why they killed it.
So
it pisses
enjoying
me
this
off. Good. Well, and I know, and look, it kills me because I do come from the music radio world. So I knew Danny Goldberg as a artist manager. You know, he managed Nirvana. He managed Bonnie Raitt. I knew him from those days, from the days I did music radio in LA. And then he comes, it was before I was ever at Air America, he comes in as president or whatever, and not like Air America was running perfectly before then, but he screwed it up. From what I understand, and again, I wasn't there at the time, what I heard through the grapevine was that he came in and said, you know, our first priority is getting Democrats elected, and, you know, that politics was his priority. Well, I'm sorry. When you run a broadcast network, your first priority is entertainment. Yes, with information, but there's a way to do both together. You don't exclude one on part of the other. I mean, you don't say, well, we're not going to be entertaining. We're just going to be informative and push political memes. And I understand he's the one who killed Morning Sedition, and I've never forgiven him for that. He doesn't know that, but I'll tell you. I can tell Howie Klein, too, because they go way back. Anyway, that's now. Oh, and I have the wrong Chiron up for you. I have the Howie Chiron. So let's change that.
I actually go by Howie Klein sometimes, so totally works.
Okay, well, you're a lot younger than Howie. Anyway, so Jonathan Larson is here. And, you know, again, they really downplayed the National Prayer Breakfast this year, didn't they? I had no idea it was coming.
They didn't play it at all.
Right.
I had asked the White House back in December. They told me, you know, we'll circle back when we have something to say about whether or not Biden would participate. And at that point, I was only wondering, would he submit a video? Because there was no word yet of whether or not there would even be an IRL version of the event.
COVID, right.
So it was only Sunday night when the White House put out its weekly look-ahead schedule where there was a line in there, 8 o'clock on Sunday night, that said President Biden and Vice President Harris will attend the National Prayer Breakfast Thursday. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did they explain why in this day and age there is a National Prayer Breakfast, or, you know, for that matter, why there ever was a National Prayer Breakfast? Because for what I remember is there's in the Constitution actually codifies the separation of church and state. And that's what the founders had in mind. I mean, most of the founders were not religious people. They wanted freedom of religion. That was the reason why, the main reason why they split. And it didn't want religion, no national religion. So why do we have a national prayer breakfast?
You want the origin as to why, which I am guessing you're familiar with, or do you want to know why we still have it?
I want to know why we still have it.
Why do we still have it? Well, of course, the sort of simple answer to why we still have it is because the family, aka the Fellowship Foundation, continues to put it on every year. And as we reported last year, during COVID, they don't have the guest registration fees that normally sustain their operation. Huh. But every year they're funded by, secretly until we reported it, they're funded by Franklin Graham. They get, I think it was $150,000. And that sort of helped them keep afloat, even though they didn't have breakfast fees, registration fees coming in. So they can do it if they want, right? A private organization can do it if they want. The reason it still exists as something that the unknowing onlooker would mistake for a government event, which is not by accident, the reason it still exists in that form is because there are still a handful of Democrats that are willing to give it their imprimatur publicly, even in the sort of, like, as you said, the downplayed version. The family did put up a website. They just didn't tell anyone. And that lists, I take that back.
They told their people, their ministries, right?
They told their people, right.
And go ahead.
Those websites list, here are the members of Congress who are our honorary host committees. None of those honorary hosts were so engaged in the project of uniting people through prayer that they announced it. None of them put out press releases. When I reached out to every single Democrat on the host committee, I think five in the House and I want to say seven in the Senate, only two of them even responded. And they basically said, you know, we're doing it to pursue unity.
To pursue unity. Oh, there's that trope again. Like, that is possible. And like, the other side ever has worked toward unity? I remember the 4 years before Biden took office, and the guy who was in the Oval Office then never once tried to cross the aisle, never once said, I'm the president for all the people. I represent everyone. To best of my recollection, he said things like, those Democrats are anti-American and, you know, shit like that. So this is, it's so frustrating. And then to punctuate it, so Joe Biden not only did not send a video, he showed up in person. And, you know, I didn't listen to his whole speech. Frankly, the whole spectacle nauseates me. But then I saw this one clip and it was all I needed to see. And you know what? I'm trying my hardest to give Joe Biden the benefit of the doubt and realize, and I know these days we're supporting the lesser of two evils. I will always support the lesser of two evils when the evil is a return to fascism, is the normalization of Nazis and an authoritarian form of government, and Trumpers and bigots and racists, and, you know, I could keep going. But I have a hard time defending this. So we know that Mitch McConnell has done nothing but be an obstructionist throughout the 8 years that Joe Biden was vice president, and he's doing it again. But Joe Biden, he has to play that, oh, I'm going to be the peacemaker. And this is one short clip of the address he delivered this morning at the National Prayer Breakfast.
And Vice President Harris, Majority Leader Schumer, Mitch McConnell. Mitch, I don't want to hurt your reputation, but we really are friends. And that is not an epiphany we're having here at the moment. You've always done exactly what you've said. You're a man of your word, and you're a man of honor. Thank you for being my friend.
Oh, my. That's pathetic. I'm sorry. Thank you for being my friend? What is he, on the Golden Girls? Why didn't he just sing it? It is so frustrating. Mitch McConnell is anything but a man of honor. What the hell?
Are you asking me what
yeah,
the hell?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I'm venting, but really, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, I think it's actually kind of an interesting moment that does go to the heart of what the sort of heart of the family and its involvement with members of Congress, which is the Democrats who are actively engaged with the National Prayer Breakfast and the family, they have genuine bonding through faith with Republicans, much more so in the weekly prayer meetings on Capitol Hill than at the annual one. But because I think because they have these moments, they have that personal connection. And, you know, we probably all in our lives have people who vote in ways that we find repugnant,
yes,
but who we maintain reservoirs of affection for, especially, you know, with their family. And so I think there's a similar dynamic there. The difference, I would argue, is that when you are there as a representative, you don't get to just act on your personal connections anymore. You now must represent. And if the people you are elevating reject and oppress the people you represent, you have to abide by a different standard than just your personal connection with folks.
I think so. Right? You would think we try to learn from our mistakes. We had 8 years of Obama thinking that the Republicans are going to come around and work with him. He extended every olive branch possible, and they kept rebuffing him. And Mitch McConnell said clearly a number of times his one priority is to make Obama a one-term president and to make sure he never gets a piece of legislation passed. It was simply to obstruct anything and everything they did. So then Joe Biden wastes a year thinking he's going to get Republican support for Build Back Better. And then when it's killed by one of his own, by the way, he says, oh, I never, never imagined that the pushback would be so strong. Really? Where has he been?
Well, I think these folks are they're not really grappling with the fact that the Republicans they engage with can be personally nice to them.
Uh-huh.
And I think to some extent there's a little bit of a not quite Stockholm syndrome, but you know, I think some Democrats it's very important for them to have quote unquote, you know, the other side of the aisle like them personally. And so they're willing to do things that appear to be the only way to get them to acknowledge your basic humanity is to go into their forum,
mm-hmm.
in their faith, and practice it in the way that they dictate. You know, as opposed to being able to abstract it and say, you know what? You're not supposed to judge my humanity or anyone else's based on whether or not you get to hear my innermost secrets right. and my confessions and whether or not you approve of how I see faith or my lack thereof. That's not the job. And I have a problem with facilitating a system, which these Democrats are doing, that perpetuates that mindset that I will acknowledge and respect your humanity as long as you do X, Y, and Z
right
in front of me, one-on-one, so that I can see it. No, you're going to go to Capitol Hill. You need to be grown up enough and intellectually sophisticated enough, sorry, to abstract and to empathize in the abstract and not to assume that the people you don't know, you don't see, whose faith you don't share, whose ideas you don't agree with, your bottom line starting point for those people still has to be, those are good people.
Right. And in this case, they're not. So Jonathan Larson, I am going to direct people towards your Twitter stream. It's at JT Larson with an E. And I'll link to it from the blog where I post today's show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/2-3-22. You make a lot of really good points in there. And I just, as an aside, the shout out to Cake was wonderful. Love the band Cake. And I suggested that their rendition of I Will Survive works as well as the song that they replied to you with.
That also
works. I'm a big Cake fan. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cake's awesome.
Yep.
But anyway, you these days, you're working for the Young Turks. TYT Investigates. You're the managing editor there. And mm-hmm. you're not just covering the family in terms of today's prayer breakfast, but you've kind of done the deep dive into them. And you've got a whole page up there inside the family. So how long have you been doing this and are you okay?
I'm good. I'm fine. I'm kind of looking forward to stepping back a little bit. I felt an obligation because last year early last year, we obtained some documents from inside the family, which for the first time ever gave us a look at everyone who was invited to the prayer breakfast and who invited them, which meant now we could see a full X-ray of who's in this organization, what degree of connectivity is there, who's inviting who tells us what kind of networks are they trying to build. And so, you know, it's something like 4,400 lines long, and that's just the one big year that we have. We have smaller sheets from another year. But so that allowed us to say, okay, let's look at this person. Who did they invite? What country are they from? So we exposed a Ukrainian anti-LGBTQ politician and leader who was allowed to submit many names, his network, to come over to the U.S. to go to the National Prayer Breakfast.
Wow.
And last week, I believe it was, we put up four articles, because I'm nuts, showing how the family essentially created a political network in Guatemala that gave this one guy who had no diplomatic experience, gave him connections to U.S. politicians, which then made him the perfect guy to be the ambassador to the U.S. for Jimmy Morales. And if people aren't familiar with Jimmy Morales, he was kind of like a Guatemalan Trump a year before Trump.
Right.
A comedian, racist, homophobic remarks. And Morales came into office pledging to support a UN anti-corruption task force which had done amazing work and was wildly popular. And this is the point I've made about the unifying power of prayer. The task force had bipartisan support in the United States Capitol, bipartisan support at a time when nothing had bipartisan support. Republicans and Democrats in the Trump era all agreed this task force is the bee's knees. What happened then was that the task force began to look at campaign finance reform, campaign finance violations. And they began to look at Jimmy Morales. And It turned out that his network had engaged in campaign finance violations. So they clearly started coming after Morales. So what had to happen then? The ambassador I told you about before, he activated his network of family allies, Marco Rubio, Mike Lee, Senator from Utah, a bunch of others. He activated them. And what did they do? They shattered the bipartisan consensus on the effectiveness of the task force, and they managed to kill it. Morales escaped prosecution. Morales stayed in office. The prosecutor, who had actually been gunning for Morales, had to flee the country and now lives in a studio apartment outside D.C., where she has to rely on essentially financial support from fellow Guatemalan refugees. And by the way, I will add, the situation in Guatemala, which is really tied into the corruption there, which we have because we don't have a UN task force anymore, that's now a major foreign policy headache for the Biden administration. They actually put out lists last year of, here are the corrupt people in Guatemala, Supreme Court judges, on and on and on. And that has lots of knock-on effects. I talked to human rights activists there. The human rights situation there for LGBTQ people is terrible. Immigration, as you can imagine, is certainly implicit in all this stuff as well. If your country is corrupt and drug gangs have politicians on the payroll and there's no way for you to make a living to feed your family, you're going to go. Of course you're going to go. So we essentially connect all the dots and show how the family's political network doesn't mean the family decided in 2015 we're going to take over Guatemala. But they secretly create these networks and those alliances. Whenever history calls on them to mobilize, they're ready to go. And no one in the meantime has any idea that these people even know each other.
Wow. Wow. You know, and this organization has a long history in D.C. And, you know, Hillary Clinton was a card-carrying member. I don't know if they actually have cards, but she was involved in their weekly prayer circles or whatever they, meetings or whatever they do. She's a religious person, and she, from what I understand, was part of the family. I don't know if she's still involved, but your headline yesterday reads, Biden Gillibrand quietly sign on for anti-LGBTQ prayer breakfast. I guess you can say that because they are.
They certainly signed on. Biden said he would participate. Gillibrand said she would co-chair. And when I say quietly, what I mean is we asked both of them well in advance, are you doing this? And neither one responded to us. Neither one confirmed it. Neither one of them put out a press release saying it. They essentially helped the family keep it quiet
and
leading up to it.
Right. This is just also astounding to me. They do their thing today. Now, I guess it wasn't televised this year because they were trying to downplay it and they only want their people to know what's happening.
It was on Christian
Broadcasting Network, right?
I'm sure CBN did cover it, but I would assume that C-SPAN covered it. The White House, I believe, streamed it. I don't know exactly where else it was. You could find it. It's just that no one beforehand
publicized
to the general public said, here's what we're doing and here's where you can find it.
Even though
they could have given people weeks of advance notice.
Right. And you would have thought that the Democrats would have put a stop to this years ago when I remember it's got to be 10 years ago already when Dr. Ben Carson got up at the prayer breakfast. This is at the time he wasn't known as a politico. He was a brain surgeon. He was a neurosurgeon who famously separated conjoined twins. And to my horror, my kid, who at the time was maybe in sixth or seventh grade or something, and hated reading. You couldn't get her to pick up a book. And one day she brought home a book, and it was called Gifted Hands.
Right.
And I thought, how nice. It's about this doctor who separated conjoined twins. And then it was right around that time. And then I see this Dr. Ben Carson using the National Prayer Breakfast to just rip Obama a new one and be very political and offensive. And I told my daughter, I love that you're reading. You're reading that book. She didn't understand why. And I let her finish it. But, oh, my God, I bit my tongue. That it changed. And then during the Trump years, it was a hate fest. Why are the Democrats still allowing this to continue?
Well, when you say the Democrats, right there's hundreds of Democrats.
I know.
As we've been reporting, a growing number of Democrats have said, I'm going to go do something else, right?
Right. So the participation was quite low this year, not as many have.
Well, it's tough to say because we don't know how many show up, but we do know that the number of Democrats, at least on the House side, that are in the sort of the families like made up honorary host committees, there were only five compared to, I think, 11 Republicans. Mm-hmm. And, in December, Senator Tim Kaine,
dropped out, right?
Emailed me and said, we have no intention of going. And then earlier this week, right after my article came out, so it was too late, a spokesperson for Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Democrat senator from Ohio, emailed a statement to me as well, saying that he's going to, instead of going to the annual thing, he's going to continue to meet weekly to reflect and pray with the people he meets with.
Ugh, that bothers me. And Chris Coons?
Well, no,
would not
he's saying instead of.
I know, but still, why do either? Right. I'm sorry. Yes. What, really? But Chris Coons, who had an interesting no contact with, right? They didn't respond to you?
I believe it was 2019. Actually had to hire a freelancer to essentially catch Coons outside the National Prayer Breakfast because they would not speak to us. And it's fine. You know, as a First Amendment absolutist, I believe you have the right not to speak to me, but I don't understand how people can reconcile the idea that this is a unifying event. I'm interested in political unity. That's why we need to bring evil, terrible people to the breakfast and break bread with them. And I'll talk to CBN, Christian Broadcasting News, but I will not talk to the largest online progressive news outlet in the country.
Amazing. It's just amazing. And we wonder why we're in the shape we're in right now. You can use your own fill in the blank because we know what the position we're in right now. I'm arguing with some person on Twitter that I really don't have time for today, whose intent, look, I find it very difficult to defend Biden in many cases, to defend the Democratic Party. But again, I'll go back to the lesser of two evils and just know that at least there are Democrats who are working to make things better. If we didn't have Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, perhaps we could have gotten more done this year. We, as Joe Manchin said, we need to elect more liberals. Listen to the man for one time, elect more liberals. And so we won't have to be at their mercy. But think back to look at what the Republicans are doing under Trump. They're willing to put the prospect of, you know, keeping their job above the Constitution when they swear to defend and uphold the Constitution, not to protect the president or the guy who would be the Republican nominee. And what we're seeing is just reprehensible, and it's frightening. It scares the crap out of me.
Yeah, we used to have lines, mm-hmm. right? And so I think we had a much more understood, taken for granted sense of what those lines looked like. And we never came near those lines. And we've now, on multiple occasions, passed by these norms. And lots of people who we sort of assumed would take care of things have sort of said, hey, that was awful. did you see that? That right. Well, boy, I hope someone else who's not me does something about that.
Yeah.
The January 6th committee, the if I can just go off a little
Please.
Bit here, like, I'm glad that Congress is investigating, but the entire premise of the investigation seems to be this notion that we can only catch you if we find some secret thing that is liable to instill shame in you. If you announced it on TV on January 6th and did it obviously, we don't know how to catch you for that. That's a terrifying thing, that if the guy says, I have no shame, and by the way, therefore, I'm going to do all of this stuff. I'm telling you right now that I am doing it. That's supposed to make it easier to get you.
Right.
But the lack of consciousness of guilt seems to have a paralyzing effect on, I wouldn't even say necessarily just the Democratic Party, but like, where's the Justice Department? Where are, you know, any number of attorneys general? And that's not to lump them all together. Clearly, some of them are on the case for sure. But Democrats really have to wrestle with this inability to go after people who have no shame and no consciousness of guilt.
Well, that's the thing. And it's hard to shame someone who has no shame, to you know, to call them out when they don't care. They just don't care. Right. They'll look at you, look you straight in the eye and lie about everything and then
or
say you're
you
the ones
truth.
Who are lying.
Right.
Or tell you the
right.
truth. Right.
Yeah.
When you go, okay, now what do we do about that? Well, I don't know.
We also have a media ecosystem that rewards it.
Yeah.
Wow. Can you believe they said that? Let's put that on TV.
Right. Let's repeat it ad nauseum. Again.
Why it is or isn't bad or true. Or whatever.
Right. And you'll notice that the Fox so-called news network, you know, the fake news network, is not over the air. It's on cable. Because if it was an over-the-air terrestrial television using the public airwaves, the FCC would shut them down because you're not allowed to call something news if it's not news. But they don't have jurisdiction over cable or the internet, for that matter. So these people today can say and do whatever they want. They can call it news with no consequences. And the consequence is on us because millions of people believe these lies. And I believe most of the people who went and stormed the Capitol really believe Donald Trump when he told them the election was stolen, because that's where who they're listening to, thinking that they're getting news when they're not.
Right.
So yeah. we are in opposite world. I don't know.
Yeah.
You've heard my opposite world thing, haven't you?
I have not.
This is opposite world.
I've been reading about Guatemala.
Before. Oh, okay. Well, you'll recognize opposite world.
Everything okay. You thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
That's where we are. Nothing yeah, makes sense. Yeah. You can't have an honest debate with these people because they don't know what the word honest means. So, you know, you have to start with a, you know, the ground rule, sky blue, grass green, and they won't agree to that.
And it's hard because, and look, not to get too weird or philosophical here, but to some extent, I blame the left for years of sort of elevating the idea that whatever you feel is cool and go with it. Right. It was basically training people to embrace confirmation bias. Mm. You know, there are anti-science segments of the left and have been for decades. And, you know, I think the left sort of had good intentions. I know they did back in the 70s and so on when they said, you know, we need to pay attention to how people are feeling. Right. This was a tool to try to create empathy,
yeah.
systemic empathy for people who really needed it
yeah.
and who should have been getting it. But when you say that it's about feelings, well, everyone has those.
Yeah, right. Yes,
right?
Yes, yes. And how do you say, well, my feelings are valid, but yours aren't. Anyway,
right.
Jonathan Larson, it's so great to talk to you again, and I hope we'll do this again. Tell us where people can find your investigative work into the family.
So our family content, our family articles, reporting, we keep at tyt.com/inside the family. And I apologize for saying the word content on the air.
Oh, so it's quite all right. No worries at all. I'm late for Howie Klein, so I got to run. Thank you so much. Thank you for covering this. It's really important. And I know it's not fun. So go take a shower. Do whatever you need to cleanse your soul. and, you know, get back to work, I guess, because our work is never done.
Sometimes it is fun, actually, but thank you so much. Thank you,
Jonathan. You take care. It's great to see you again. All right, and now it's time for Howie. And here's how we introduce Howie Klein.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, hello, Howie Klein.
Hey, Nicole. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good, too.
You sound very low-key today.
Oh, I was just taking a nap.
Oh, well, that'll do it. You know, I'm sorry. You're the second person I woke up from a nap this week. Dave Johnson, too. He came on with his hair all disheveled, but you don't have hair, so that's not. But you're not on camera either, so we wouldn't know, you know, if you did. Yeah. Anyway, Howie, let's start musically before we get to the politics, because you put a post up on downwithtyranny.com about something along the lines of, hey, I miss socializing too, but I'm going to wait until the pandemic clears up, or at least the emergency is lifted in Los Angeles, to go out. And then you posted a song from an artist we know. You want to talk?
Do you know Steven?
Well, we used to play Bare Naked Ladies at KSCA, I think the only station in LA that ever did back then. And they did a couple of shows for us, like birthday shows and stuff. I don't know him well, but, you know, had him up on the air.
Right, and he's not with the band anymore,
no,
so he's got his own career,
right,
as a solo artist.
Right.
And doesn't live in Canada anymore either. He lives in the Syracuse, New York area.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's weird. But he put out a song, and it's only like a minute and a half long, and I'm hoping, because he released it himself on Bandcamp, that I won't get copyright violated for playing it.
Good. I'm so glad you're going to play it. I love it.
I think it's great. I heard it because I read about it on downwithtyranny.com. So this is Stephen Page, the former lead singer, co-leader of Bare Naked Ladies, with a song called Choose Young, and it goes like this.
If you gotta choose between spoken and sung, if you gotta choose between your teeth and your tongue, if you gotta choose between Rogan and Young, choose young. Choose young, pay him half a cent or pay him millions of bucks. Pay him while he chews a bunch of traitors and trucks. You can try to dress him up in a tux, but good luck, he still sucks. Sometimes you gotta choose between Caesar and Christ. Sometimes you gotta choose between naughty and nice. Sometimes you gotta ban a comic book about mice. Don't think twice, don't think twice. Oh, if you look back now at how far we have come, and you're asking how things could have gotten so dumb. We used to clap for the nurses every night on the landing. Now we dox them and we stalk them and we shout, let's go Brandon. Sometimes you gotta choose between Pfizer and death. Sometimes you gotta choose between Elon and Jeff. Sometimes you get confused about who's actually oppressed. Let me guess, God bless. Whoa, whoa.
That was Stephen Page, Choose Young. And Howie Klein, I just realized I played it on the same channel you come up on, so you probably didn't even hear that.
Not a word.
Ah, sorry, but you've heard it. So I realize it. Just
anyone who actually wants to hear to read the words, they're up on my blog.
That yes, they
the
are.
Blog that you were just talking about.
That's right, and so, I'll post a link to
and
the
a link to the song as well.
Yes, I will. I'll put that on the blog along with today's where I post today's show. So, all right, I'm going to make you feel older than we already do. Tomorrow is the 25th anniversary of the end of that radio station where we met, where I, you know, where I worked at in LA KSCA. 25 years ago tomorrow it went off the air.
And did you know there's I have to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Was it your show that I came on with and they did the American debut of Time to Say Goodbye?
I believe it was, if it wasn't mine, it was Mike Morrison. But I remember you coming up to the station, and that was the opera thing, right?
Right. Well, he was an opera singer, but it was kind of a pop song. And I remember, you know, I came back from Europe. I was so excited about this song. Our German company gave it to me, and they said you could put it out if you want, because they signed him for this pop song for a one off, and My promotion guys all said no.
Who was it again? Tell me the artist again. It was
Time to Say Goodbye. It was two artists.
Okay.
What the hell's his name again? A blind.
Right, the blind opera singer whose name that's so not my wheelhouse. Hold on. Time to Say Goodbye. I will tell you in a minute. I can picture him.
Broadway thing.
Andrea Bocelli and Sarah Brightman.
Yes.
That's so, what Andrea Bocelli.
And my promotion people all said, no, we wouldn't be able to do anything with this. I said, are you crazy? This thing is a smash. No, it could be a smash in Germany. It's not going to be a smash in the U.S. No one wants opera. I said, it's not opera. It's pop. And right. They said, no. So I went to your station. And I think it was with you.
It might have been.
And I played it. And for the rest of the show, people kept calling up, some crying, saying, oh, what was that song? That song was so great. Could you play it again? And then we played it on the last song of my little set there.
Huh.
Again, a second time.
Right.
But anyway, and then I gave it to, all my people just didn't want it. Everybody said no, the marketing people, just everybody was, and it was free. We could have had it for free. It turned out it sold millions of copies.
Oh, yes, it did. Yes, it did. Yes. Well, and that, you know, that was the only radio station that could have done that. So I'm actually doing a special program tomorrow. I'm getting the old gang back together, as many of them as I can assemble, along with some artists that we played, some air checks, some, you know, some memories. I'm just astounded that it's been 25 years. And time goes on. What gets to me, it makes me feel good, is that 25 years after this little radio station that was only on the air for 2.5 years disappeared, people still remember it. I put up a picture a couple of weeks ago. It was like National DJ Day or something. And I posted it on Facebook and Twitter and got hundreds of responses and people going, that was the best radio station ever. I still miss you guys. I still listen to my tapes and the music hall CDs. That response 25 years later, I think is extraordinary. And so I thought, you know what? We should do something to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the end of it. So we are.
Nice.
Yeah. So we'll have fun tomorrow.
So how is that going to work?
I have a Zoom room set up. I'll give you the link if you want to come in. I have not been able to locate Mike Morrison yet, who was the program director, but Mimi Chen, I think you know Mimi, don't you?
Yes, I do know Mimi. I didn't realize that's where I know her from.
Yeah, so Mimi did nights for us. She had been in San Francisco radio before that, but she did nights. Dennis Constantine, who was the consultant who put us on the air,
from the Long Island radio station.
No, he programmed.
So Colorado, right?
Was Colorado KBCO. He was the guy at KBCO, and he programmed KFOG in San Francisco, and he programmed Portland, the station in Portland. I'm drawing a blank on it now. Who else? Terry Gladstone, I think, is going to join us. Anita.
KGON?
I'm sorry? KGON was the rock station. What was the AAA in Portland? KFOG was San Francisco. I don't know. Drawing a blank. But who else? Anita Gevinson. You know, I'm trying to get them. And then some of the artists. Do you remember the Wild Colonials?
Yeah, I have the name, but not,
okay.
I don't
so
know.
Angela McCluskey is going to be there. Peter Himmelman is going to join us tomorrow. Rami Jaffe, who I became friendly with when he was the keyboard player for the Wallflowers, and you know now he's part of the Foo Fighters, has been for 10 years now. But so Rami's going to join in. So I don't know what's going to happen. I've got a bunch of air checks to play.
Did you guys used to play John Wesley Harding at all?
Sure. In fact, John Wesley Harding did a Starbucks morning remote with us. I used to do, you know, on us hosting mornings, and Chuck Moshantz did news. We would do these remote broadcasts from 6 to 10 a.m. from different Starbucks locations. John Wesley Harding did one. The Fabulous Thunderbirds did one. John Hyatt did one that was awesome. The best one was Dar Williams and Joan Baez together. Joan Baez showed up there at 9 o'clock in the morning and sang and had a great time, and it was magic.
Very nice.
Yeah.
If you want to have John Wesley Harding, I can, you know, do it by email with you.
Okay. Well, let's talk later. I honestly have way too much for an hour, so I have a feeling we're going to go into overtime tomorrow.
Do the whole day. I didn't know.
No. Just for my show, but we'll probably go long because, you know, just the tape I've pulled. I pulled audio from, you know, the morning we were on the air when the news came down that Jerry Garcia had died. And what happened was organically throughout the day, I mean, just naturally, when we got the news, I went into Grateful Dead mode and just played Grateful Dead music and Jerry Garcia music. Well, do you know we were the only station in Los Angeles that did that? The rock station, KLOS, played a couple of songs and went back to regular format. So we wound up being the place where everyone came, we put together a vigil at Griffith Park that night. So somebody shot video. There's tons of video of it up on YouTube. So Mimi was on the air at the station. We're playing it over the loudspeaker. I'm there. I had been working since 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was there till 10 that night, but doing this all day. And, you know, people came up and were telling their memories of the Grateful Dead. And it was like this throwback to the 60s. But, you know, this is why a radio station that you can identify with is so important, because you have a sense of community. And I don't think that exists anymore, because most of radio today is so canned, so formatted, so corporate.
Yeah, of course it is. There aren't almost any real stations left.
Right.
I mean, obviously there were some. I mean, the college radio stations,
right,
and the public radio stations. But in terms of the commercial stations, they're all canned. It's really,
right,
pathetic.
No, it's really pathetic. And that station, KSCA, was the last in the group, Golden West Broadcasters, that was owned by Gene Autry. And by the way, the station in Portland was Kink, K-I-N-K, is what Dennis programmed in Portland. That was the AAA. And they're all gone now. In that format, there's WXRT in Chicago is still going strong.
And is that their format?
Yes. It's AAA. It's Adult Album Alternative. So WXRT in Chicago, WXRV in Boston, which is not actually Boston, it's Haverhill, Massachusetts, but I used to program that station. They're still on the air. And there's, you know, maybe a dozen real AAA stations around the country, but that's it. And then there are some non-coms like XPN in Philadelphia. And there's a good one, I believe, in Dallas, KUT or something, but they're few and far between. For the most part, radio has, you know, gone corporate, and it's all because of consolidation. It's why this station was sold, because it was February of 97. The Telecommunications Act of 1996, hello, was signed by Bill Clinton the year before, and that's when all the consolidation started, and that's when the big Clear Channel started buying up all the state. Clear Channel, Their subsidiary, Heftel, is who bought KSCA and turned it Spanish. Yeah.
And is it successful as a Spanish station? You don't know,
it
right?
Went to number one, like,
wow,
immediately. It was so depressing. Yeah. And we were this little niche station because, you know, we were eclectic. We didn't play the hits. We broke records. We introduced artists. So, and the thing is, you know, it would be a natural to do that kind of thing online, but you can't. It's too prohibitive. The costs for licensing. I mean, when I play a song here, I get copyright violated, or they take any revenue that I may make off the video. And so for licensing, there's just no simple way to license the music to play it on a podcast, or I would. And the way it works is if you do come up with the money to do it, the more listeners you have, the more expensive it gets. So it's cost prohibitive. I don't know how anybody does internet radio. Music radio. Right. Yeah.
But they, some of them do. How do they do it?
I don't know. And you know who the best internet music, internet radio station is still Radio Paradise. This is a guy named Bill. I can't think of Bill's last name. It'll come to me when I'm not trying. But he and his wife have run. He used to be the engineer at KPIG in like where the aquarium is in California. And he turned it into this Radio Paradise. And he's been going strong for over 20 years, but he's the only one I know of who's been able to do it. And I think he just has a big, you know, base of people who support the station financially. It's, I think we're in this weird, you know, in between time. They're going to have to figure it out. They're going to have to figure out the licensing and a way to make it doable. You know, Dennis Constantine, who will be with us tomorrow, he for a while went over to Live 365. Monterey, thank you. Monterey area. Dennis Constantine for a while was the head of programming for Live 365. And even they couldn't sustain the model. So I don't know what the answer is. It's I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime, unfortunately. But someone needs to figure it out. Live 365 was a thing where basically you could create your own radio station on their platform and you could program the songs, you can do the whole thing, and the licensing fees were paid through Live 365. So it was all built in. They took care of all the paperwork and the hassles, but it was still expensive. And for hobbyists, and that's pretty much what they had there, you have to have money in order to be able to do something like that. And then they went under. I know they're back in some form now, but I don't think it's the same. I think because this is uncharted territory. The Digital Millennial Copyright Act, which again came out in the 90s, in the early 90s, has never been updated. And it just doesn't work with today's technology. I mean, the technology is so far beyond the system they have set up that you can, it doesn't work. So I don't know whose responsibility that is, but somebody needs to get on it.
Congress.
Hey, okay, let's talk Congress for a minute here. Howie, what is going on with Marie Newman?
Oh, I did a post about it.
I know, I saw. So is this just a smear job on her, or did she run afoul of some ethics?
Oh, it's just a smear job. I know barely any members of Congress who have been in hot primary races where that isn't the case, where that doesn't happen. It happens every day where you try to get your opponent to leave, and you know, you can give them a job, you could promise them something if they leave it. And I'm not saying that it's a great thing, but it's so common that it's like literally dozens and dozens and dozens of members of Congress do it constantly. So what happened to her? The people who have always sort of hated her and financed, you know, very, very conservative anti-union people who have financed the campaigns against all of the campaigns against her, they're doing it again. And they are specialists in smear jobs. That's what they do. And once it worked against her, and then the second time it didn't work, and now they're back for another try.
Wow. It's just so ugly. They're alleging that she reached out to somebody who may have run against her and offered him a job to not run against her and paid him an exorbitant amount of money. And I mean, it looks horrible.
The exorbitant amount of money part. But she did. There were two scenarios. One was that she didn't hire him and he was angry and sued her.
Right.
And then the other was that she did hire him. So those are the two that, you know, it's like two opposite things that they're like carrying on about. And their thing about the Office of Congressional Ethics.
Yeah.
Investigating her. If you went to them and made up any story that you wanted to at all and demanded an investigation, they have no choice. They have to investigate, huh. Even if no basis of fact whatsoever.
Okay. Wow. So this is...
So, I mean, no one has found anything incriminating against her. The people who are alleging this have been alleging things about her for the last 6 years. And it's just lie after lie after lie. And although there's some basis to what they're saying, there's no criminality to what she's saying, to what they're saying. And there's nothing extraordinary about it as well. In fact, just today, Trump offered a job to someone to get out of a primary. Where was it? In Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So Trump's candidate for the Senate in Georgia, was it Georgia? Oh, no, it wasn't for the Senate. It was for the governorship.
Oh, against so Brian Kemp. Right. I did hear something about this.
He's got a candidate, David Perdue, who he's running against Brian Kemp. But Brian Kemp is kicking Perdue's ass. And there's another candidate in the race who's also a Trump guy, but Trump didn't endorse him. He endorsed Perdue. And the other guy has a couple of points, not really enough to make a difference. It's not, if he leaves and every single one of his followers goes to Perdue, Perdue will still be losing. But Trump offered him a job if he gets out of the race today.
Wow.
So, I know, you know, Trump is hardly someone we want to hold up as a model, but my point isn't that. My point is that this is just the most common thing in the world. Like, right. Everyone does it. I mean, everyone does it. Everyone in a hot primary does this thing.
And so they're blowing it up, saying, you know, just to throw something against the wall to my only problem with Marie Newman has been she's been so quiet. And I guess that's one tactic to take when you enter in your first year in Congress, your first term in Congress. I'd like to see, I mean, yeah, she's a tough, brilliant woman. I'd love to see her more out front, yeah, but I guess she's
the vice chair of the Progressive Caucus for messaging. And all the messaging that comes out of that caucus comes from her.
Huh.
So she's, you know, when you say she's brilliant, she is brilliant. She's working really, really hard. Plus, she's good on all the issues. You know, she doesn't want to, as far as I know, I'm not speaking for her, she doesn't want to go and, you know, say the kinds of things that the media wants to hear in order to get press. I mean, in other words, you can say, you know, you can yell, fuck Trump,
yeah,
over and over again,
yes,
and the media will pick up on,
sure,
it. That isn't what she does.
Of course not. No. You know, I'm moving on because we've only got a few minutes left and I ate up so much time talking radio. But I saw Jessica Cisneros interviewed on Mehdi Hasan's show last night. And finally, she's getting some juice because Henry Cuellar is finally coming under some scrutiny. The FBI raided his office last week. Do we know what that's about?
Yes, and not only his office, they raided his home.
His home, right.
They raided his home, then they raided his office. And yes, the scandal is about Azerbaijan.
Huh.
So Azerbaijan, which, as you know, I've been to, is one of the most corrupt places on the face of the earth. It's run by a small, just very, very small inbred elite. Everything goes through them. It's very, very rich because there's a lot of oil there. The wealth goes only to that little group. So there's not money anywhere else. And that group is paying Cisneros in many, many ways, including cash, to be their front man in Congress. They have a problem with Afghanistan. They have a problem with Armenia. And they needed someone to speak for them. So here he is on the Mexican-American border. Right? You think that maybe that's what he would take up his time? There's so many,
yeah,
problems down there. It's a very poor district,
mm-hmm,
a lot of immigrant problems as well. But he is the head of the American Azerbaijani caucus in Congress. That's what he spends his time on. And he's very, very close with the Azerbaijani ambassador.
Huh.
And they've, you know, they give him trips, they give him campaign contributions, they launder money to him, and that's what the FBI was investigating, what his... It's really a mafia. Azerbaijan society is run by an Azerbaijani mafia, and he sniffed it out, and he's part of it now. So that's what they were investigating. My funny story about Azerbaijan was that immediately, as soon as they sniffed out that it was, you know, a place where money was, sloshing around, the Trumps went there. And when I was there, they had just completed Trump Tower in Baku
oh,
being the capital. And soon after, and I went to see it, and it's really in a bizarre part of town, very, very hard to get to. Nobody would ever go there, and you can't walk there, and there's nothing around it. And it's the most bizarre thing that they built this hotel there, thinking that they would create their own world, that it would become something.
Oh,
yeah. It never became anything, and in fact, it was closed down when I went. There was nothing happening. And then soon after, they burned it down to collect the insurance money.
Oh, my God.
Trump Tower.
I'm not surprised. You can tell me anything about that family, and I'd say that makes sense, knowing who they are.
He was in business with the same people that Cuellar is in business with.
Of course he was. Henry Cuellar, as you have warned us for years, Howie, is not a Democrat. He belongs in the same pile as Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, and we'd be better off rid of them. And when Jessica Cisneros, we have a great candidate, right?
Yes, we sure do.
Now, is this her second time running, yeah?
Yes, so she has all the name recognition she needs to beat him now.
Right.
So how did the, I didn't see the Mehdi Hasan interview. I think he's great.
He is
so
great.
I'm curious now how it went.
Oh, it was very good. I just, you know, I was doing 20 things because, in addition to doing this special reunion show tomorrow, I told Brad Friedman I'd fill in for him when I didn't realize the date. So I am up to my eyeballs in, what's the saying, alligator. So I saw that she was on. I'm like, oh, cool. Mehdi has Jessica Cisneros on. That's great. It was when we were eating dinner last night, and I just half heard it. But I'm sure it was great because he is and she is.
Well, he is. I just wonder how she came off on the radio. She's a little bit low key. So And he's very high key.
Right.
So I'm curious to know how that went. I'll have to look
it'll
for
be,
it online.
It'll be up on YouTube. Mehdi, they post his show on YouTube, so it should be there.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I'll watch it.
Okay. All right. With that then, Howie, I will leave you.
One more thing.
Yes.
Let me bring something up. This weekend, we're going to give away some of the 415 books.
Oh, good.
It's called Disturbing.
Disturbing the Peace. We had the author on last Friday.
Oh, yes. How did that go?
It went well. We got off onto tangents, but we had a great conversation. Good guy. Really good guy.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
So he autographed some books. Plus, there's I have a soundtrack that's made by that's put out by another company. So every winner gets the book and the soundtrack that goes with it. You know, and so you can read about those bands and then you can listen to their music. And we're doing the purpose of the contest is to raise money for all of the candidates that we've endorsed who want to be part of the contest. But the way you do it isn't it's not go, it, I, I'm asking people to vote based on who the favorite band is. Of all-time favorite band of each of the candidates.
Oh, right.
So each candidate has said, you know, my favorite band is AC/DC, or my favorite band is Carole King. And then I'm asking people to donate to them based not on their policies or on anything else, just based on who they like musically. And then the candidate who gets the most votes gets a $1,000 check from Blue America.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Everybody wins.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and although there's a the website is up and there have been a few people who have already started playing. Officially, it starts on Sunday.
Okay, so at downwithtyranny.com or on the Blue America website.
Well, it's the Act Blue
page. Okay.
So it just it's the last slash where you put in the name of the like Act Blue or Blue America or whatever you put in. It's just 415.
Oh, I see. Okay, cool. Well, I'll find it and I'll put a link or I'll do it tomorrow over the weekend when it goes live. One thing that I shared with Bill, the author of the book, because the book goes into the Ramones, your background with the Ramones. And do you know, when I was in college, I started radio in college at WUSF, but University of South Florida, here in Tampa. And the Ramones came to play the Agora Ballroom, and I got an interview with them. And so I went along with my boyfriend at the time and this other woman, Pam, who I don't even remember, to their hotel and did an interview with Johnny and Joey, and we produced a radio special around it, the Ramones radio special. It was my very first radio project, and it is horribly embarrassing. But do you want to hear? You want to hear a few seconds of it?
I do.
Okay. All right. Here's how it started.
Plastic fans.
What? Oh, hold on. Wait. I got it. I got to back it up. All right. Here we go. Here we go.
Here it was.
It was 1980.
Okay. 19. Oh, they were already a big band by then.
Yes, but that's when I was in college. It was 19. I started in radio in 79. So they were already big, right? Because I came later than you did.
They were big in the alternative world. I thought you were going to say, you know, that you had this, you know, this thing from 1976 when they were like just like a garage band or something.
No. Oh, no, no, no. They were already big and they played at the.
This so I can't hear it again?
Yes. Okay. So here's the beginning. Here's the beginning. Wait, I'll send it to you. Yeah.
On June 10th, 1980, the Agora Ballroom was filled to capacity with enthusiastic fans. The Ramones were making their first appearance in Tampa, Florida. I'm Nikki Sandler.
I'm Pam Wiener.
And I'm Stu Septoff, and these are the Ramones.
All right, did you hear that?
If someone asked me who that woman was who was talking, I would never guess you in a million years.
Nor would I. That, you know, that's when I thought I had to talk like this. I'm Nikki Sandler, and these are the Ramones. So I'll send you a link to it because it is very funny. I mean, it's painful for me to listen to, but it's cool that, you know, I can go back. And it was just horrible. But we had Johnny and Joey, and wait, let's see if this might be a song. I can't tell here. Wait. No, that's a song. Here we go. Oh, here's an interview part.
Wait.
We're not even supposed to like it. Otherwise, we'd look like that. I mean, you want the regular kids there. I mean, these people just being misled. I think that's fashionable, and it's already went out a long, long time ago.
You should see the way people who don't really know who you are react, you know, when you say the word new wave or punk, you know.
Well, they naturally think you're coming out there with a
I know, they took, everybody got bad feelings towards whatever it was, and I mean, all the bands wanted to do was just to play real rock and roll, and the bands didn't do any of this stuff.
I had asked them about, what do you think when kids show up to your show with safety pins through their cheeks? And that's when Joey said, we don't get it. I don't know. I just want to play the music.
Yeah, that and they were always saying that. Their whole careers, they were saying that.
Yeah.
I loved them. They were so wonderful. And they were more wonderful than they thought, than they knew they were.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'll send you a link to this because you'll get a kick. Because you were such a fan, you'll get a kick out of it. It's just a snapshot in time. But I'm in that kind of a, you know, looking back mode, I guess. That's what 25 years later will do for you. All right, Howie Klein, I'll let you go. And we'll talk to you next week.
Next week, thank you.
All right, thank you. Find Howie again at Down With Tyranny. Bye. DownWithTyranny.com. And when you're there, you can put a slash blue-america-pack and you'll get to the Blue America Pack page. And I'll okay, so Joy in the chat room asked, where's my blog? Okay, so when you go to NicoleSandler.com, it's not a blog per se. You go to the website, and first of all, there's a thing, the Nicole Sandler Show, and that's a pull-down menu, and that's where there's a ton of content, and the blog, the show archives are in there. But also, if you just scroll down a little further, there are some boxes, and it posts, I think, the last six shows right there. So there's a number of ways to get to the pages of each show. Or you could just go to, depending on the date of the show you want to hear, say you want to hear today's show, you'll go to NicoleSandler.com/2-3-22. If it was December 3rd, it would be NicoleSandler.com/12-3-22. So that's the format. It's easy to find. And if you can't find it, just email me and I'll send you. All right. I'll leave you with the news and tomorrow. So it'll be a little self-indulgent, but hopefully you'll enjoy it. We should be having a lot of fun. Bear with me. All right. I think you'll enjoy. I'll try to make it as entertaining as possible, but I know there's a lot of people looking forward to it. Today, I'm going to post a couple of things on there. There's two big radio trade online publications. One is an email. It's emailed out. It's called RAMP, Radio and Music Pros. The other one is All Access. And it's allaccess.com, and it's actually open to the public. You don't have to pay for it or anything, but they, in order to get in and read the content, you need to register. But it's free. So if you want to see radio station playlists and stuff like that, if you're interested at all, you can go in there. And there's a nice blurb about us in there today as well, about tomorrow's show. So anyway, that's what's going on. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Jonathan Larson for coming on and talking about the work he's doing dealing with the family. The prayer breakfast has got to stop. All right. With that, I'm done. I still have Brad's show to do for tomorrow, and then all this busy work around this other show, because I like to make things difficult for myself. So anyway, here's the news. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, YouTubers. Can't thank you enough. And I'll see you tomorrow. And here's the news. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
News breaking overnight of U.S. Special Forces conducting a major counterterrorism raid in northwestern Syria near the Turkish border on Thursday. First responders said 13 people were killed, including 6 children, in what appeared to be the largest such U.S. operation since the 2019 assault that killed Islamic State leader al-Baghdadi. Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby said, quote, the mission was successful with no U.S. casualties. Early reports suggested the target was believed to be an al-Qaeda leader. Close. President Biden clarified later, saying that the raid killed ISIS leader Abu Ibrahim al-Hashimi al-Qurayshi in Syria. While we're on the subject of military deployments, the president has also approved sending 3,000 more U.S. troops to Poland, Germany, and Romania to support the defenses of European allies. But some in the army might instead be going home. The U.S. Army announcing Wednesday that it will immediately begin discharging some 3,300 soldiers who've refused orders to get vaccinated against COVID-19. According to an Army memo dated January 31st, commanders must immediately begin, quote, involuntary administrative separation proceedings against any soldier who has, quote, received a lawful order to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19, has been provided a reasonable opportunity to receive the COVID-19 vaccination, has made a final declination of immunization, and does not have a pending or approved medical or administrative exemption. The Army is the last branch of the armed forces to begin discharging unvaccinated service members. The Marine Corps, Navy, and Air Force have discharged a combined total of almost 600, that according to the Associated Press. Lots of shock at CNN, where its president, Jeff Zucker, resigned on Wednesday after admitting that he failed to disclose a romantic relationship with one of his chief lieutenants. Zucker said the information about his, quote, consensual relationship with his closest colleague, that being CNN Executive Vice President Allison Gullist, came out during an internal investigation into Chris Cuomo, the host that was fired by CNN in December, over his involvement in the response of his brother, former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, to sexual harassment allegations that forced him from office. Zucker said he was required to disclose the relationship, quote, when it began, but I didn't, I was wrong. Both Zucker and Gullist are divorced. Gullist, who plans to continue working at CNN, said that she and Zucker were friends for 20 years, but their relationship changed during COVID. Well, yesterday we told you that at least 19 historically black colleges and universities received bomb threats on the first day of Black History Month, no less. Well, the FBI on Wednesday identified 6 juveniles described as tech-savvy as persons of interest in what appear to be racially motivated bomb threats. Howard University in Washington, D.C. and other schools received threats both Monday and Tuesday. Investigators said persons of interest around the country are suspected of using sophisticated methods to hide the source of the threats. Well, first they turned over Trump's records. Now the National Archives will turn over the records of former Vice President Mike Pence to the committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol as early as next month. This despite the former guy saying he wanted to keep those documents secret. This is the first set of records related to Pence's office that the Archives has cleared for release. The letters
show tension over what may be key communications about the insurrection at the Capitol, and Pence is overseeing the Electoral College certification in Congress, which Trump wanted to stop. Pence's team is cooperating with the investigation. Separately, former Department of Justice official Jeffrey Clark and his attorneys met with the House Select Committee for nearly 2 hours yesterday, 2 months after the panel voted to hold him in contempt for his lack of cooperation. And, oh no, here we go again. More than 100 million people are under winter weather alerts across at least 25 states, stretching from the Mexican border to New England, as yet another massive winter storm pummels much of the U.S. More than 20 inches of snow have already piled up in Colorado Springs, while parts of Illinois and Indiana have been inundated with around a foot of snow. Dangerous travel conditions grounded more than 2,300 U.S. flights on Wednesday, and thousands more have already been canceled for Thursday. Meanwhile, the price of natural gas is soaring, causing a spike in home heating costs as millions of Americans are turning up the heat to try to stay warm. In Texas, a state that has legitimate worries about its power grid holding up, Senator Ted Cruz released a checkpoint list for being prepared, spurring a storm of online shaming, most messages including references to Cancun. And on second thought, maybe Canada isn't that much of a panacea for Americans. Canadian truckers have been protesting COVID-19 health restrictions by staging a blockade of 18-wheelers in Ottawa. Police declared the week-long assembly an unlawful occupation of the country's capital and say they're looking at, quote, every single option, including military aid, to bring the situation to an end. The truckers are part of the so-called Freedom Convoy and are protesting a recent mandate requiring drivers entering Canada to be fully vaccinated or face testing and quarantine requirements. The group is also protesting against other health restrictions like mask mandates and COVID-19 lockdowns. The dozens of trucks are blocking traffic and forcing businesses in the area to shut down. And that's pretty bad. But then there's Florida, where a Senate committee advanced a 15-week abortion ban in the state, despite pleas from doctors to make a decision rooted in science and to consider the ramifications for patients. Instead, during the hearing, the committee voted down an amendment that would make exceptions for victims of rape and incest. You'll never believe this one. Rudy Giuliani, you know, the embattled lawyer who tried to help Donald Trump overthrow the results of the 2020 presidential election, well, he's apparently taken a gig as a contestant on the Fox TV show, The Masked Singer. Deadline and TMZ reporting that when Giuliani removed his disguise and revealed himself to the judges during a taping for the upcoming season, Ken Jeong and Robin Thicke walked off the stage in protest. And finally, yesterday, Graham Nash, who was celebrating his 80th birthday, announced that he was standing with his former bandmate Neil Young, removing his solo music from Spotify. Now, the rest of the former Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young have stepped up as well, with David Crosby and Stephen Stills joining in and asking for Spotify to remove all of the band's music as well because of the streaming platform's continued support of podcaster Joe Rogan. In a statement, they said, "While we always value alternate points of view, knowingly spreading disinformation during this global pandemic has deadly consequences." And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.